Okay, welcome to the Sunday night. There is a solution, newcomer and returning member meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. This meeting is being recorded, so you may visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The link will be posted in the chat. The opinions expressed here are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered to the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Please join me in welcoming Noelle F., a compulsive overeater from Florida.
Hi.
No, I don't know if it's just me, Noelle, but your audio
You
is cutting
guys
in and
so
out a little
much
bit.
for having me. My name is Noelle, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater.
There might just be a bit of a
Thing
delay.
I do is try. I can continue, or I could call in on my phone really quick if this is really bad.
Seemed to kind of get
Sorry.
better there at the
It might be
end.
getting better. Let's give it a try. Yeah, let's try.
Okay.
Thanks, Noelle. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Just let me know if it gets bad again.
Yeah, I think it's better actually.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right. So, I'm Noelle R. I am a recovered compulsive overeater. I have been in and out of the rooms for over a decade. And this last relapse that I had lasted a little over 2 years. I came back September 30th of 2024 and quickly worked through the 12 steps through the Big Book of AA and with a sponsor. It quickly for me was about 6 weeks. And started sponsoring others and live in 10, 11, and 12, which I like to consider the growth steps because I really, there's no completion in this program. It is a growing situation. One day at a time, I have to continue to grow the spiritual connection that I have. And I really feel that I have been granted a huge miracle. I mean, I have released over 100 pounds and that is an incredible thing that I've tried to do my entire life and never been able to get there. I didn't understand that I didn't have the necessary power. But the reality of this program is that it's given me my life. And so it is about so much more than the physical transformation. I walked in here wanting weight loss. That's what I was here for. That's what I was after. And I didn't realize that what I really need was I needed a spiritual awakening. I needed a whole new experience. And this program has given me that and a way to live my life that is happy, joyous, and free. So I think the first thing I'm going to do is go in ahead and share my pictures because I know that when I was a newcomer, I really wanted to see the results. I wanted to know the person I was listening to was actually like had been where I had been. So this is me and my kiddos. The first photo is me back in 2008. I was at my heaviest weight. I had just graduated college. I gained all of my weight in college, and I was just a few pounds shy of 300 pounds, and I'm 5'9". And then the next picture is from right before I came back to program, actually, with my two daughters. So I have two kiddos and a husband. And that next picture is actually like a week or two into program. So my whole family there. And then the very last photo is a picture of us from this past October on a cruise together. And funny enough, I'm actually wearing the same shirt today. I just realized when I hopped on the meeting, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm wearing my cruise shirt today. I mean, you can obviously see the physical transformation. And it wasn't me. That's the incredible thing. I show up. I do the work, but it is higher power. It is God in my life. And for anyone who's in this room and the word God turns you off and the word God is bristly, I completely understand because when I came to this program, I was very anti-religious, and people would talk about God and the spiritual stuff, and I'm like, what are these people talking about? Like, I'm here to lose weight. Why are we talking about God? This doesn't make any sense. And I just want to welcome you and know that this is a safe space for you as well, that you don't have to prescribe to any specific religion. The people who wrote this big book so long ago, I mean, it's really, really brilliant that they did not attach it to a specific religion. It is open to anyone. And this big book, The Big Book of AI, is a textbook. And this teaches me what I need to do in order to get better. And so I have to go in with honesty. I have to go in with willingness. I had to go in with an open mind. And I had to be willing to have a new experience this time around. Every other time that I had come into OA and tried to do what I was told, I still held on to that piece of, well, you're really bad. You might have to do all that. I'm not that bad. I don't have to do all of what you're doing, right? Maybe I do 80%. Maybe I do 90%. Maybe some days I do 100% and other days I do 25%. But it was still me. It was still my decision, my ego, my will running the show. And I can only see that through hindsight that that was what was going on. And I hadn't showed up, surrendered, and willing to do whatever I had to do in order to have this miracle that is promised to me. So, backing up a little bit, I want to actually go and read in the doctor's opinion from the big book. So, on page XXVIII, it says, "We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve." And so, those first few pictures, that's me in my life with all of these issues going on, all of these physical manifestations of the shame and the disease that is pulling me down. And I didn't understand and realize that I have this two-part disease, that I have a physical allergy and a mental obsession. And it's so important for us to understand the physical allergy. I feel like, especially for me as a compulsive overeater, because in other 12-step rooms, I walk in and the physical allergy is very obvious, right? Like if I have addiction to drugs or if I'm drinking alcohol, like, okay, I can't have alcohol. Simple, done. But with this, I have to eat. Right. An alcoholic has to drink, they have to drink water. But like, I have to fuel my body with what it needs. I can't just say, oh, I'm not going to eat anymore. So I have to be really, really rigorously honest with what creates the phenomenon of craving in me. Because I think the other piece that separates us a little bit is that my allergy is not necessarily the same as your allergy. And so I have to know what is triggering that phenomenon of craving in me. What are those items that I go after, that I seek, that I hide, that I steal, that I am constantly chasing? And those are my allergic foods. Those are my alcoholic foods. Those are the things that I have to abstain from 100%. For me, it is sugar and flour. Those are the two things I can't have. I also don't eat fried foods, because those also have an effect on me. And then further down on that same page, it says men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. So I didn't realize that all of those years that I was chasing an effect. I would have told you I'm a foodie. For a long time, I lived in Chicago. I loved Chicago. I ate my way through Chicago for at least 4 years. That's what my husband and I did for fun. I was a morbidly obese woman who was ashamed to be out. And so, in my early 20s, which wasn't very fun. And so, what we would do is we would go out, we would go to dinner, we would go to bars, we would try new places. And that was, food was everything. Food was my master. Food was my entertainment. Food was my best friend on the weekends when I should have probably been hanging out with other people my age. And instead, I was binging Netflix and binging, takeout. But I didn't realize that It goes more for me than just being a foodie, just liking the food too much. That food and those specific ingredients do something to my body that they do not do to a normal eater. My husband is a normal eater. He can eat a little bit of this and leave the rest. He can put it in the pantry, forget it's there, and it goes stale. That is not my experience. That has never been my experience. My experience is that when I trigger the phenomenon of craving, instead of eating and getting satisfied, I am, ignited for more. And I open up this like wound that is never ending, this gap that is never filled. No matter how many, cupcakes or pieces of pizza I put in me, it's not enough. It's never enough. And it took me a really long time to understand that moderation has never been something I can do. I have never been successful on a diet for more than maybe 30 pounds. I have never lost a significant amount of weight because I am unable to moderate. I have this physical allergy. These foods get into my body and they set off a craving. And instead of being like, oh, that was good, my brain goes, oh, you know what? You should probably do better because you want to lose this 100 pounds. So you should do better on Monday or on New Year's or after your birthday. And so why don't you make a list of every single thing you would like to binge on before that happens? And let's eat every single one of those items. And I will go through the grocery store, through the takeout, wherever, and like seek and do all of these things. So in that whole process, right? Like I'm going through this spree, and then all of a sudden they continue to talk about, at the other end, I'm remorseful. I don't want to keep doing this. I want to stop. But I don't realize that I don't have the necessary power in order to stop. So it says, after they've succumbed to the desire again, the phenomenon of craving develops. They pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. It's repeated over and over again. I want to stop. And I tell myself that I want to stop. And they'd also talk in this section about frothy emotional appeal. I had a lot of frothy emotional appeal in my life. I had doctors telling me that I needed to stop because I was hurting my health. I had family members who were very concerned. I went off to college a slightly overweight girl and came back morbidly obese, and people were concerned for my health. All of those outside voices, anyone who said anything to me, ignited shame in me. And made me think, why are you pointing this out? Why are you? And I became defensive. And all of these outside people love me and they want to help me. The doctors, the professionals, they want to help me. But what they don't realize is that I'm beyond human aid. They cannot help me. And I want to get into the second half of this disease, right? So it would be bad enough if I had this physical allergy and that was my issue, like a peanut allergy or a shellfish allergy, where I ignite the allergy and I have an abnormal reaction. That's all allergy means in this sense, right? We're not talking about breaking out in hives. I just can eat enough for a family of four in a single sitting when I ignite my physical allergy with these alcoholic foods. But the crazy thing is that I put the food down and I have a mental obsession. So that comes in and says, you know what? This time, I think you can do it. This time you can control and manage. This time you can just have one. Or the liar comes in, as I've heard someone on a meeting call my disease. The liar comes in and says, you know what? You've been really good for like 3 months. You totally deserve this. Or I can't tell you how many times I have eaten at my significant other, where he has said something because we will go on a program or a diet together. He can stay on the program 2 weeks in. I'm dying. I'm like, no, I'm binging my brains out when you're not around. I'm sneaking around and hiding. And he'll say, why are you eating that? You're not supposed to be eating that. Oh, I'll show you. I'll show you later when you're not looking. When I'm upstairs nursing my one-year-old, I've got deli meat stacked in the drawers and I will pull it out and I will eat whatever the heck I want and you won't know anything about it. Craziness. Craziness the way that I act when I am trying to seek this effect, right? And the craziness is that I can get the food out of my system. I can remove the physical allergy, but that disease will come back in and will sneak in and will tell me a lie and I will believe it. And Janet B talks about in the podcast that I've listened to that she calls it a broken bridge. So when I put my hand on a hot stove, I know I have a memory, I have a brain that works, right? I'm a smart woman. I know that that whatever will burn me if I put my hand on the hot stove. My brain can recall the pain, the suffering of any time in my past where I have gotten burned. Something has hurt me. And my brain rushes in to tell me, wait, don't do that. That's going to hurt really, really, really bad. But for some reason, my bridge does not work when it comes to these foods. And my bridge doesn't work really when it comes to food at all. I have to follow a weighed and measured plan from a nutritionist, from a professional that I have surrendered to, because I no longer get to control and manage my own nutrition because my bridge is broken. And that diseased mind, that built-in forgetter, will forget the pain and the misery of being a size 26 and my thighs rubbing together and the tears that I would have on my wedding day when I couldn't lose the weight and I needed to actually enlarge my wedding dress and let out seams because I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to lose the weight for this special day. None of those things were enough to make me stop. And I'm so grateful to have all of you here and to have a place to come. Because for the longest time, I thought I was just a really, really crazy person. I was a really sick person. I didn't understand what was wrong with me. And then through this textbook, I have learned that I have a disease. I don't have to carry this shame anymore. I didn't ask for this disease, and I can't cure it myself. So that brings us to, okay, I've got this two-part issue, right? I've got a physical allergy and I've got a mental obsession, which is even if I manage to put the food down, I can't stay stopped. I can't stop from going back out and picking this up, which is totally crazy. No matter how much I want to and how much I promise to myself. I was going to speak to a few more of the things that really, really hurt me when I was in the disease. I have vivid memories of waking up in the middle of the night with horrific acid reflux. I would do a lot of my binging in the evening. And I would wake up gasping for air, thinking that I was dying. And I'd have to go sit in a chair because all the reflux, all like the stuff had to come back down. It was in my throat. It felt like
15
icing
minutes.
my time. Thank you. It felt like I was dying. It felt like I couldn't breathe. I would literally wake up and I thought I was drowning in my dreams. And I would sit there and cry. And I would swear to myself that this is not going to happen again. I'm going to stop. I'm going to figure out a way. And within however long the next morning, I was in the Starbucks drive-thru. I was in the McDonald's drive-thru. I used to joke, I'm going to see my crack dealer, going to McDonald's. And it just didn't make sense. And then I thought, okay, big life changes, right? I could move. I became a mom. I got to be a stay-at-home mom. These beautiful babies that I have been blessed with, there is no way I'm going to continue to act this way and behave this way with these beautiful children that I have been blessed with. Nope. Turns out babies are really portable. They go in these really cool little car seats and you can drive them around from takeout window to takeout window and they just sit back in the car. They don't make a peep. They don't mind if you're watching a TV show and I could just binge my brains out all day long. And so my disease progressed and, the beauty of this program is that we have a solution, that I don't have to figure this out on my own. I don't have to reinvent the wheel. There is a book that teaches me exactly what I have to do. And so, what I had to do was I had to come into these rooms with willingness and an open mind and honesty. My sponsor taught me that God, spirit, higher power will not coexist with dishonesty. And I didn't realize how much of my life was full of dishonesty. And it wasn't like this horrible dishonesty. I mean, some of it was like I was definitely like sneaking around buying food and like telling people I was at the gym when I wasn't. I would use OA. I'm at an OA meeting when I wasn't. But a lot of it was people pleasing. A lot of it was because I thought that I knew what you wanted to hear and I thought that lying would serve me better. And so that was brought to my attention within the first 2 weeks of program when my sponsor was like, I need you to be honest with everything, not just me, not just the food, which was a huge thing for me, but everything in your life. And when you see dishonesty, you have to call it out and you need to tell me about it right away. And that was a really big wake-up call for me of like, wow, there's a lot of dishonesty that I live with on a day-to-day basis. Another really big thing that changed for me this time around in OA was my food. I had been unwilling to commit and measure and weigh my food in the past. I was unwilling to follow a food plan. I thought that I knew better than because I've seen nutritionists, right? And again, I'm not a dumb person. Like I understand what I'm supposed to do, but I couldn't ever do it. And this time around, I was just done. I was done doing it my way, and I knew The reality, and they talk about this in the book, is that there are two paths, two alternatives for us, right? I was either going to continue as a morbidly obese woman, binging, hiding, stealing from my family, and pushing them away so that I could eat the way that I needed to. I was going to continue on that path for the rest of my life, or I was going to turn to OA, turn to higher power, surrender, and say, I will do whatever you say. I'm done. I'm done fighting. There's no middle path for me. There is no third, easier, softer way. And all those other years in OA, I was really searching for OA light. I wanted to do part of what you said and not the rest. And so this time around, when I came in fully surrendered, fully understanding that my way was not going to work, I was open and I was willing, and I was willing to look at things in a new way and in a new light. And so for me, that meant following a food plan from a nutritionist. It meant committing my food and weighing and measuring. And it was painful for the first 2 weeks. I mean, I texted my sponsor some choice words about how I felt about my plan, and it was not easy. But the freedom that it has given me, because I don't worry about that anymore. The food, it's down. I'm neutral. You know, this past Christmas, I baked cookies. I do whatever I need to do for my family. It's not my food. It's really, really not my food. And it's so not about the food anymore, which doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, wouldn't have made a lot of sense to me when I first came in. It's like, what are you talking about? This is why I'm here. But I put the food down, and that's like step zero, because I have to clear myself of this physical allergy in order to go through the steps in the book, the steps that we read earlier. And so then the next part is what's really important, where I open myself up to this higher power, and I say, you know what? My way hasn't been working. What's your way? Let's try a different way. Let's see. I was going to read some more in the big book. Let's do page 30 because it's like one of my favorite pages. So it says, most of us have been unwilling to admit that we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think that he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it's not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is a great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. And that was where I was headed. I wanted to continually prove to myself that one day I'm going to be able to manage and control this thing. I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to find a way. And then when I came back this time and just laid it all down, I was like, no, it's not my way. And I had to follow the directions in this book. So I worked the steps quickly, like I said, and I love the idea of hospitalization period, where this has to be top priority in my life and I have to really, really focus on program. But I also love the fact that we can do this program regardless of anything, right? It says married, not married, job, no job. We can still do this program. And funny enough, like God tapped me on the shoulder and I had the willingness to come back and to ask for a sponsor and to start working the steps in a very inconvenient time in my life. I was traveling with my family. I was living in a hotel room. I did not have access to a kitchen, so I had to eat out, which was not convenient for weighing and measuring and bringing a scale and doing all that fun stuff. I was in the middle of a very big event commitment where I was doing a hot air balloon festival. I was waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning and helping, and my kids were involved, and it was craziness. It was total craziness. But that's the time. That's the time where I was willing. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do it. And my sponsor laughs now and looks back and she's like, I didn't think you were going to actually get through this. Like, how you had so much going on when you came in. So I didn't have the hospitalization period as far as like, well, let me sequester myself and only do OA and only focus on OA. That's not what happened. But I made it top priority. It had to be my number one thing. If that meant I got an hour less of sleep because I needed to get up and read my big book, or I needed to put headphones in and listen to a podcast, I needed to make my three outreach calls a day, I needed to go to my three meetings a week, I made it happen because this is life or death for me. There is only two paths, and I don't want to go down that other path of being that morbidly obese woman, but more than that, being spiritually bankrupt. because I could not be happy and joyous and free to my full potential on that road because I was hurting. I was hurting myself. I was hurting those around me. The chaos that I caused in my wake of trying to chase this effect constantly. It's terrible. And I would have told you that, oh no, I don't hurt anyone else. Like, I'm such a nice person and I take care of my family and da 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 da. No, when I am the actor thinking that I'm the director, I am self-will run riot. And everyone else is not following my script. And everyone has a role to play. And if they would just play the role that I assign them, everything would be perfect. But nobody's playing the role. Nobody's following my script because they have their own script and they're doing their own thing. And so then I'm upset because it's not going the way that I think it should. So I sink my claws in a little bit deeper and I try and control and manage and manipulate a little bit more. And then it's still not going my way. And I end up in this state. No wonder I ate, right? Like, I'm so disturbed and I'm so resentful and I'm so selfish. And really, for me, like in that 10th step process, or fourth, fifth step process, like dishonesty is most often the thing that comes to light for me, that the lies I'm telling myself and what am I continuing to believe about this situation that is just not true. The words I put in people's mouths and the weight that I give to their words that they say, and I make up a whole script in my mind of what they're thinking and what they're doing, and it's just not there. And so by following the 12 steps and by finding a higher power, the whole point of the 12 steps for me is to put my hand in God's hands. I have to have a power greater than myself that is going to run my life. I have to still take right action. I still have to show up and do the work. But I don't control the outcome anymore. I'm out of the outcome business.
5 minutes.
Thank you, Jessica. So, like with my parenting, I get to show up and I get to parent my kids to the best of my ability, but I don't get to say what that's going to look like today, tomorrow, 5 years from now, 25. I just get to show up and do the best that I can today. And that's a one day at a time thing where I am showing up every single morning. I'm spending my 30 minutes of quiet time with my higher power in prayer and meditation. And I'm saying, God, what's your will for me today? What does it look like for me today? Who am I interacting with today? So, is my role today to be a kind daughter, a loving wife, a patient mom? Like, what does this look like today? And how can I be of service? How can I be honest? How can I be selfless? All of these things that my moral, philosophies that always sounded so good, but I could never get myself there. And that's because, again, like, I just didn't realize I don't have the power. On my own willpower, it's just not going to happen. It's not going to get done. But when I release and surrender and say, you know what? God, you've got the reins. I don't know how this is going to turn out. And sometimes I don't like the way that it turns out, but I am safe and I am well protected. That step two for me is absolutely huge. I have a higher power that loves me and cares for me and wants nothing but the best for me. And my higher power is big enough to take care of all of this. So Noelle doesn't have to take care of it. I don't have to be in charge. I get to let it go. And so working these steps, 10, 11, and 12, looking at my inventory, every single day, where was I selfish? Where was I dishonest? Where was I showing up in fear? That's another really big one for me. I didn't realize I would have been, I'm not afraid of things. Oh my gosh, I am afraid of everything. I do not like conflict. I don't want people to be mad at me. I am afraid. And so I have to, fear for me is self-reliance versus God-reliance. So who am I relying on? Am I living my life like God is everything? Because God is everything or God is nothing in my life. And so the 10th step gives me the ability to do these spot checks throughout the day of where am I not showing up where God would want me? What's my fear look like? What's my selfishness look like? My 11th step is my prayer and meditation time in the morning and throughout the day where I pause when agitated. I pause when I don't know what to do next. I ask higher power. I pick up the phone and I make a phone call and I get God with skin on, a fellow who tells me, are you hearing this? Are you, is this what you're saying? And then all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, that's what I was supposed to hear right now. Thank you. Thank you. So these tools that we use to keep us on track, and I'm just so thankful for the fellows in this program and the beautiful program that we have. And a technology like this Zoom meeting is incredible. And then 12th step, right? This was freely given to me. I didn't have to pay anything for this. I've paid a lot of money for a lot of programs, a lot of weight loss tools, gyms, all kinds of stuff. This was free. And all I had to do was find somebody who had what I wanted and ask how they got it. And that's what I did. And then I had to be willing to do what she said, follow the instructions, and be honest and willing. So that's what I've been able to do. And I think that I've had a miracle that is available to every single one of us. So this program is just really incredible. And I'm very, very grateful to be a part of it. So thank you for letting me share. And with that, I will pass.
Thank you so much, Noelle. Wow, such a clear and powerful journey through the steps.